you believe assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
And good morning, everyone. Thank you for that well-received round of applause. I appreciate it quite a bit. And I want to go straight to a listener email. I get this email. Bill, I reviewed this video, and there was a link attached to YouTube, about the gun confiscation in New Orleans, and was wondering how you would have handled yourself faced with significant opposition like these folks. Larry Knapp. This was dealing with the gun confiscation post-Katrina when the Mayor Nagin had his police chief henchman stand up there and say, we're not going to let anybody have guns. And they went so far as to send the cops in a lot of different volunteer law enforcement and also National Guard out, literally door-to-door to take guns away from people. Since then, now, of course, that was in total violation of people's constitutional rights. Unwarranted searches and taking of people's guns. As a matter of fact, a lot of those guns have still not been returned, even though the NRA has filed lawsuits to force them to return them. Essentially what it was, there was a lady that was there, and she said that she had people knocking at her front door, back door, and her side door. I don't know how many doors you need to have your house, but they were knocking at hers. And they came in there, and they wrestled this woman to the ground and took a gun away from her. How would I have handled it? Well, having been prepared for this sort of thing. By the way, a federal law and many laws throughout many states have been passed to prevent this from ever happening again. My plan for something like this had been before this ever happened and still remains today. If something like this were to happen, knowing clearing techniques and the way that people do this sort of deal, my plan would be to lie in wait in a position of advantage to where I could take one of these people hostage. And with that, from a position of a little bit more authority, let them know that that was not going to go down. Try to talk at them through the door, and if that didn't work, my way of doing this under the act of tyranny, basically having criminals bursting into my house to do me harm and take my guns, I would treat them as I would anyone else. Whether they were under illegal orders from somebody within a police department or a military outfit or not, it is still ends up being illegal criminal acts, and I would treat them with illegal criminal intentions. That's the way I would respond. If they had illegal criminal intentions, I would respond in kind. And in kind would most likely be taking one of these people hostage, the first one that busts in the door and turns my way, and everyone else gets negotiated with from this position of a hostage. And that's the way it would go. And if I were to soak up rounds for it, then I guess I would. But I would much rather die on my feet then live on my knees. There is no way I'm going to put up with any of that sort of thing. They better wake up awfully early on a morning where I stayed up the night before very, very late to try to get over on that. That's just the way I do it. I am a force-on-force kind of guy. I have always lived my life that way. I don't shy down and back down from people that have illegal orders. I will take it to them. Now, that's just me. And it's easy for me to sit here on the radio and tell you that, but I've got to explain to you that I have actually trained in that fashion. I have actually prepared myself for that sort of thing. So, you know, am I a little bit on the fringes, on the outside of that? Some people might say so. Others might say, you know, you're doing the right thing. I think I'm doing the right thing. That's the way I try to live my life, trying to do the right thing. We got more to come after the break, so stay tuned. This is Bill Carnes on 2A Radio.
Rule 1, assume it's loaded. Rule 2, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule 3, listen to the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. 1-800-313-9443.
I'm going to address an article that I read recently, which would prove, it's to make politicians prove that whether or not they support the Second Amendment. The rhetoric that they spew on the campaign trail is one thing. What they actually do when they're in office is another thing. Just recently, there was a some organization called Obama on the carpet for a statement that he made, a policy that he said he supported during the campaign. And not that they wanted him to support it. They actually wanted him to not support. This organization did not like what he said on the campaign trail. And Rahm Emanuel, his chief of staff, said, oh, you know what, that was just campaign rhetoric. Okay, campaign rhetoric, and that term means lies. That was just lies. That was BS. That was a fat scoop and load of bull is what it was. Much like the soundbite that we hear constantly that's all over YouTube and people are playing it all over the air, where Obama says, I'm not going to take your handguns, I'm not going to take your shotguns, I'm not going to take your rifles, or whatever order he said it in. Again, campaign rhetoric, which we just realize is what? A bunch of lies. Okay, a bunch of big, big bucket load of BS. That's all it is. So, this person writes this article talking about addressing things such as Carol Quigley, who is a historian at Georgetown and also an influence on Bill Clinton, who laid out in a book called Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. Basically being that the argument that two parties should represent opposing ideals and policies, but that's actually a little bit foolish because both parties should accept some very similar things at the core and maybe some fringe social aspects on each end. So the idea here is, if you're cynical about a politician running for office, whether or not they actually support the Second Amendment or they support gun control and you being disarmed, ask them a few questions. There's just been too much history of people saying one thing on the campaign trail and doing something different once they're in office. It happens to the majority, the vast majority of people. It's, you know, tell me what I want to hear and I'll put you in office. And once you're there, you can do what you want. That's just the way it goes. And I hate it. We're all tired of it. Here's a little quip on it. If you think about it, this is what John Kerry told us. That the Second Amendment is a boilerplate interspersed with assurances that the candidate comes from a hunting family. Now, John Kerry came out, oh yeah, I'm come from a trying to make us believe that he goes out and he's a hunter, right? I come from a hunting family, yes. And I got to tell you, John Kerry is nothing more than a bad live image of the mascot from the New England Patriots with a big long horse head. To try and believe that that guy was actually out there from a hunting family, and Hillary Clinton tried this during her attempt at the presidential nomination. She attempted that as well. Oh, yeah, my daddy used to take me back behind the woodshed, and we would load up the shotguns and the 22s and go out there, and we'd go hitting the prairie dogs and the chipmunks and go after a pheasant hunt. Yeah, thanks, doll. Thanks, darling. But we saw right through you. You were the biggest supporter of the so-called assault weapons bill. So don't want to hear anything about you trying to be a turncoat. You did everything you could to take guns away from Americans, law-abiding Americans, under the guise of crime control, which did nothing. 10 years later, it expired, and you stood up and screamed at the top of your lungs that you hated it. So here's some of these questions this guy puts together. Question number one. Do you believe that the Constitution is the supreme law of land and that the Bill of Rights acknowledges our birthrights? Question number two. If so, should these rights be proactively protected from infringement by all levels of government, including city, county, and state, which is pretty good because he puts in there proactively protected, because there's been a lot of legislation against them. So this is a way to see if they would actually support repealing of a lot of these subversive laws that have snuck through. Question number three. Please give me some examples of gun laws you consider constitutional. And of course, backing that up with, please give some examples of gun laws you consider unconstitutional. Number five. Does the right to keep and bear arms include the right for any peaceable citizen to carry them concealed without a permit, such as in Alaska and Vermont? Good question. Puts people to the test. Number six, do you believe that Americans have a right to own, use, and carry weapons of military pattern, and will you use the prestige of elected office to publicly promote that right? Now, that really puts them to the test. Because government officials just love to profile our guns. Love to profile what are called the quote-unquote black guns, right? Ooh, the evil black guns with these removable 20, 30, and larger capacity magazines and semi-automatic function and flash suppressors and things such as that. Ooh. Question number seven. Do you support or oppose registration of weapons? Please explain your answers as to why. Number eight, do you support or oppose licensing requirements to own or carry firearms? And again, why? Explain your answer. What specific gun laws will you work to get repealed? And number 10, if elected, will you back your words of support for firearms rights up with consistent action? If so, how? Now, this would be a questionnaire that goes to somebody that says that they are a supporter of the Second Amendment. At this point in time, everyone says, I support the Second Amendment. But very few back that up. If you support the Second Amendment, then please answer this, because we're going to hold your feet to the fire on it. Now, keep in mind, a lot of people are one-issue voters. I am not a one-issue voter. I'm pretty strong when it comes to gun rights, because gun rights also lead to 10th Amendment states' rights, which also lead to very personal individual rights and the infringement or lack thereof for each. So I am not a single-issue voter, but I'm pretty strong towards guns. Some people are single-issue voters. That's all. I want to know how you're going to vote on gun control. That's where they get their vote. I want to know how you're going to vote or support your position. What's your position on abortion? And that's the only way I'm going to vote. And in this day and age, I mean, the opportunity for someone to do anything other than just speak on a number of these subjects, such as abortion or gay rights, if that's your deal, that's your single issue you're going to vote on, there's very little legislation ever introduced on any of those things. I think after Roe v. Wade, I don't know of anybody that's put together any legislation on abortion. Not on a federal level, anyhow. It's just, I'm just trying to illustrate that there's going to be lots of votes on guns, lots of votes on states' rights or lack thereof, lots of votes on personal rights. So I try to keep it to something that's they're actually going to be more active in. Right. So if you have yourself a good candidate that says they support gun control, I'm sorry, they support the Second Amendment and they are against gun control, ask them, send them this questionnaire and ask them to complete it and see what they say. Now, keep in mind that they probably have lots of questionnaires from lots of groups coming to them. But this is good, especially if it's a more liberal or democratic candidate, even if it's a conservative candidate coming out of a more liberal, more democratic region. Be very, very suspicious when they say, yeah, I support the Second Amendment. Like Hillary Clinton. It wouldn't have worked. She would have never answered it. Obama, he would have never answered this. The Bahrainian candidate would have never answered any of these. It would be interesting to get people that are being appointed to posts that need approval to be asked some of these questions. Now, there's some very pro-Second Amendment people in the Senate that directly ask these questions. Look at the confirmation hearings for Sotomayor, and you'll see that she does nothing but avoid these. Such a dog and pony show. I remember one of the senators asking her, pointedly, do you believe I have the right to keep a gun in my home in Oklahoma and use it to protect myself against anybody who would invade my home? Do you believe I have that right? And, of course, Sotomayor goes on with, well, to look at the different cases involved and the interpreter, blah, 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 blah. She wouldn't say yes or no, because obviously the answer is no. She has something to hide. If the answer is yes, you give a yes and you explain yourself. If the answer is no, you hide behind a bunch of BS. Like if someone calls you and says, hey, would you like to go to lunch tomorrow? You have no interest at all in spending any time with this person at lunch. And instead of, if you did, you'd say, yeah, sure. If not, you'd say, well, you know, there's a couple of things going on. I'm not exactly sure what my calendar's going to be. And you just BS your way through it. You know? Everybody does it. You want to be nice to the other person when you give them a no. Rather than just, no, I'd rather not. Well, what's wrong? I don't like you. I don't like you. I don't like your policies. I don't like what you stand for. And you smell funny. Plus, when you eat, it's like a Roto-Rooter went through this place. It's a mess. So, no, I don't want to eat with you. We can talk on the phone after lunch if you need. That's about it. I digress. More to come after the break. This is your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio. Have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. Right now, live, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. All right, there's been a case going on in Georgia where a guy by the name of Luke Woodward ended up in the Paulding County Jail for purchasing a lottery ticket while carrying a handgun open and exposed. He was charged with carrying a concealed weapon, even though he was carrying it openly, and he was charged with disorderly conduct. All right. As reported, this guy, Luke Woodward, sued the two Paulding County Sheriff's deputies involved. It went all the way to a federal judge. Federal Judge Harold Murphy from the Northern District of Georgia recently ruled that the officers had no probable cause to arrest Woodward on either charge, and that, therefore, his arrest was illegal. All right? So, sounding pretty good so far, would you agree? Yes, so far it's sounding pretty good. But there's a little bit more to this case, so let me get into it a bit. The analysis doesn't end there. What happened was the court decided to go further and argue that the two deputies had something called arguable probable cause relating to one of the charges. The result of a finding of arguable probable cause was that the officers were immune from damages, personal damages, in a civil lawsuit. On the concealed carry charge, the court held that there was not even arguable probable cause. But the court concluded that a reasonable officer with an adequate understanding of the law would not have concluded that Woodward violated the concealed carry statute. Okay, so that was totally bogus of an arrest, totally bogus charge. On the disorderly conduct charge, however, the court came to a pretty much a startling different conclusion. Although the officers didn't have the facts to support the necessary elements of a disorderly conduct claim, this court was willing to accept that the officers may have had facts to support two of the three elements. And, quote, a reasonable officer could have concluded that the missing element was present. All right? In order to reach this conclusion, the court had to make three conclusions. This judge had to decide. First, it had to find that Mr. Woodward was acting in a state of violent agitation. The sole fact used to support this finding was the undisputed and admitted fact that Woodward checked his gun more than once to see if it was secure in his belt. Totally stupid to do. Second, the court had to conclude that a reasonable, even though mistaken, officer could have concluded that Woodward's violent and tumultuous actions of checking his gun was aimed at certain people. Third, the court had to find that those people were placed in reasonable fear for their safety. Now, third one is easy. The second one is not. Some people just be afraid of a gun because they think it's going to get up and start shooting on its own. Officers who spot people openly carrying should not, however, believe that the result of this case would be the same for them should they detain a person merely for legally carrying an open gun that's also obviously exposed. This U.S. court judge emphasized that merely carrying a gun is not violent and tumultuous. The court held the following. Likewise, if plaintiff had merely entered the store while legally carrying a gun in the small of his back, he would not have acted in a tumultuous way. The lesson from this case is probably to not fidget with your gun or check it when people are watching, which is it's obvious, absolutely obvious. You take your gun, you load it up, chamber check it, check the magazine, make sure it's full, insert it back in there, make sure any safeties are on, any decockers are engaged, put it in your holster, and you go. And don't goof with it. People that do that remind me that they're amateurs. They don't know what they're doing. Reminds me of somebody who isn't an experienced motorcyclist. And they come up, they're next to you at a light, and you can hear them just running the throttle. Just goofing with the throttle instead of sitting there waiting for the light to turn green. If you notice, people that are on bikes, on motorcycles, that do that sort of thing are either trying to get attention. Well, they're trying to get attention. They're trying to get attention either because they just got themselves a really new, you know, bitchin' chopper or something, right? Or they just haven't ridden much and they want people to, hey, look, I'm cool, I'm on a motorcycle. People that goof off with their guns and do these little checky things and make sure safeties are on or whatever it is make other people nervous. It makes me nervous. And I carry a gun all the time. Don't fidget with your guns. Okay, finding that the officers unlawfully arrested Woodward with a lack of probable cause, while also finding that the officers had arguable probable cause, resulted in the conclusion that Woodcock wins but cannot recover damages from the officers. The legal doctrine of qualified immunity protects officers who were reasonable but mistaken. Only one mistaken charge needs to be reasonable for the entire damage claim to be thrown out. So the fact that concealed carry charge was unreasonable for any officer with an adequate understanding of the law ends up meaning that nothing can be gained in terms of damages. Although the officers are immune from damages, the case is still alive on the issue of seeking an injunction and declaratory relief. Roswell, the attorney for John Monroe, who represented Luke Woodward, said, "We will examine the order and determine what further relief of the court appears appropriate based on the court's rulings." So, a bit of a win, but not entirely a slam dunk. More to come after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Radio with Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
I'm going to read you a story called "The Criminals Are Training. Are You?" So here we go. The entire nation is engrossed by the media coverage of armed thugs that killed a Florida couple for adopting developmentally challenged children. It seemed that the criminals attacked and killed a truly generous and caring couple who had dedicated their lives to helping the less fortunate. What most people missed in the coverage, however, is that the criminals apparently trained for some time prior to the home invasion, and it took place with near military-like precision. All of the anti-gun loons out there who claim calling the police is the best option can't refute that the thugs who committed this horrible crime were in and out before anyone could possibly respond. From a report at foxnews.com, all right, get this. Investigators say the robbery was extremely well orchestrated. It was very well planned, thought out, methodical operation, said the Escambia County Sheriff David Morgan, that he told the hosts of Fox and Friends. Luckily, the video surveillance system was not shut off and was active prior to the crime as the criminals had planned. Or it's likely that the perpetrators would have gone undetected. It was video evidence showing a red van leaving the scene that ultimately led to the capture of the alleged attackers. It only took 10 minutes for the thugs to complete their heinous crime and get away. Unfortunately, that was enough time for two truly innocent and caring people to lose their lives. The message for those in the self-defense community is that the villains are out there training. Therefore, we cannot count on the fact that our attackers would use poor tactics. Instead, we are again reminded that preparing for the worst is required in today's America. The crime in Florida puts homeowners anywhere in America on alert that it can happen to them. It is also a reminder that criminals, whether skilled or not, lack remorse and are morally bankrupt. Self-defense-minded people can learn a lot from the unfortunate set of circumstances that led to the murders in Florida. For one thing, just having video surveillance isn't enough to keep you and your family safe. No longer is keeping a gun in the nightstand enough. It's required that homeowners keep a gun within reach. I would like to pause for a moment and caveat on that. Keep that gun within reach. Keep it to where you can grab it, access it, and get it going within 2 to 3 seconds. But not that a tragedy would happen if you've got kids in the house and they grab a hold of it. There's been 2 kids lose their lives near where I live in Las Vegas in the last week for exactly that sort of thing. One in a home, one in a truck. One little boy shot his little sister, and another little boy shot himself in the face in a truck. The best thing in the world you can do is teach your kids about guns. And in my opinion, remove the curiosity. I've got kids. I have 4 kids. And every single one of them knows about guns. Matter of fact, my youngest shot an Uzi at 7 years old. Now some, oh, that's irresponsible. Well, not when you got a trained professional like me around. That's not. So teach your kids about guns and remove the curiosity. Don't teach them about guns with a loaded gun. Don't be an idiot. Teach them about guns. Talk about guns. Don't make it so that they're deathly afraid of guns. Make it so that they respect them and realize, yeah, some bad stuff can happen with this deal. All right? Don't be an idiot about it. If you need help, seek out the Eddie Eagle program from the NRA. Okay, back to the story, continuing. The only way a gun is of value is if you're the victim of an attacker similar to the one in Florida, and if it's literally in your hand when it happens. At worst, a gun holstered on your person is a requirement. There are some who will claim that they'd rather die than walk around inside their home with a gun. The sad fact is criminals are counting on unarmed victims, and if you refuse to act accordingly, the outcome of your attack is already assured. So if you would rather die than walk around your house with a loaded gun, something tells me there's bad guys out there willing to appease you and willing to help you carry out your wish of rather being dead than carrying a gun in your house. Don't understand it. Many self-defense experts have known for years that criminals are out there training and getting better at applying their trade. Law enforcement SWAT teams are up at the tip of the spear in the battle on violent crime. I know all too well how criminals are preparing to fight back. But realize, SWAT teams go in when there is exigent circumstances right now, or there's been a warrant issued for them to be able to go in and get bad guys. So it's after they've proven that they're bad guys, after they've done something to prove that they're bad guys and they're a threat. They don't go after people who are doing it right now. They go after people who have established that they've already been a threat. They've already done something wrong. That's what SWAT teams do. That's why fighting for a gun is so vital at this point in American history. If guns are outlawed, this type of criminal that trains for a home invasion will be empowered by knowing that they don't have any fear of an armed victim. They can go against unarmed victims. It makes their job a lot easier. Knowing that criminals are training so diligently is a wake-up call that sadly most Americans won't heed. Just like disaster preparedness are no longer priority since Katrina has faded from the consciousness, people will miss the true lessons of the attack in Florida. The establishment media has completely ignored the implications of learning that such a large group of criminals trained quite vigorously, obviously, which is a disservice to the audience, but being good citizens has never mattered to the establishment media, so they're unlikely to care. Using the Florida murders as a way to illustrate that criminals are ratcheting up their game is not exploiting a tragedy for political gain. Gun rights activists don't see the battle to secure the right to bear arms as a game to be won and lost. That's a distasteful way of handling these situations and is left to the anti-gun groups who are willing to exploit every tragedy for their own gain. In contrast, the pro-gun side grieves for the family and the friends of the people who were killed and see the event as a singular tragedy. The simple fact is that banning guns wouldn't have stopped the crime, and that's an undeniable truth. The fact that criminals are out there training to such a high level should scare anyone, regardless of your views on guns, because they just might pick your house next. All we can do now is remind everyone that when the boogeyman knocks at your door, no one can replace yourself as the first line of defense. I hope everybody really takes this to heart and really understands the implications of this. I read an email, I don't know, 3-4 weeks back about some guy that was, he was pissed that I said our rights are expensive, and they are. Let me tell you how our rights are expensive. To be able to exercise and preserve your rights, it's expensive, not necessarily so much to you, but there's court battles, and there's battles with criminal matters when it comes to bad laws and they try to enforce them. It's expensive. There's court costs, there's, you know, jail time, there's loss of wages, sometimes there's medical expenses, all in defense of rights. Is it expensive? Yes. Do you want to have your Second Amendment rights? It's been incredibly expensive for the Second Amendment rights. And if you're going to exercise your Second Amendment right, you don't have to. Yeah, you don't have to do that. But if you do, realize you should get training. If you want to exercise your Second Amendment rights, but limit it strictly to deer hunting in, say, Pennsylvania with a 12-gauge slug shotgun, well, fine. But get yourself a good 12-gauge shotgun with a rifled slugged barrel and learn how to use it, learn how to run it, learn how to aim and hit with it from a variety of positions and a variety of conditions, and learn a little bit about trajectory for that. That's responsible. If you're going to carry a 30-06 out in the woods to go hunting or across the prairie of, say, Kansas for mule deer hunting or something, well, learn about the gun. Learn about some gun safety. Learn about the terrain. Learn about where to shoot and hit this mule deer. And learn what the trajectories are at distance. Then you're good to go. Have some responsibility. If you're going to carry a 1911 45 caliber with 230 grain ball ammo, it's about as good as you can get, and you're going to carry that for self-defense, then have a little bit of forethought and go get some training on how to carry it, where to carry it, how to shoot under stress, what target area to try and hit, and how to keep the gun running with reloads and malfunction clearances, and have good gun handling. Be safe with it. It's incumbent upon you, if you're going to carry a gun for self-protection, to go through some formalized training and learn how to do it. That doesn't mean buying a book and reading it and practicing on your own. That doesn't mean buying the latest edition of your favorite gun magazines and reading the articles and going to it. Doesn't mean watching some YouTube video or ordering DVDs. Okay. All of that stuff can help. I mean, if you want to watch some of these videos and DVDs and read a couple of books and magazine articles, that's great. But once you've got at least some knowledge, at some point in time, you need to seek out some instruction from a professional who specializes in defensive firearms training. There's professional driving instructors out there. If you want to learn how to drive a Class A big rig, 18-wheeler, you want to learn how to drive that thing cross-country, maneuver in and out of some of the big cities, and back this thing up down a winding pathway through up to a loading dock, you don't go to somebody at Watkins Glen International Raceway and learn to race a road course in an open-wheel F1-style car. They're still a professional driving instructor, but that's not their specialty. Right? If you want to learn how to operate a dump truck, you don't go out to Las Vegas Motor Speedway and go to the Richard Petty Experience and drive a stock car around there at 160 miles an hour. They are professional driving instructors, but you know that whole stock car experience or the open wheel experience is not what you need to drive a big rig or operate a dump truck. So because someone works at a gun store that has a range doesn't mean they know anything at all about defensive use of firearms, or for that matter, hunting use of firearms, or for that matter, shooting at 1,000-yard bullseye silhouette competition. They may have just a general knowledge of guns. They may not even have any certification as an instructor. They might just work on the range. That happens more times than not. You don't have to have a certification. Quite honestly, I'm fairly light on official certifications from official organizations. I have a few. I got some NRA certifications. I got some Department of Defense certifications. But considering the level of training that I have done and the people that I've done it with, there's a lot of certifications that can get you up to that position. And quite honestly, it's been a little bit of a hindrance not having some of those. Because sometimes different organizations, they want to make sure you have a paper trail before they let you come teach. Well, I've been too busy teaching to go bother getting a bunch of paperwork that says I can teach, because I've actually been out doing it. My point being in this whole deal, don't just find somebody that owns guns that knows how to shoot. A friend. Oh, I own guns, I know how to shoot. All right, well, you got to find out somebody who is high-end in their skill level and ability in whatever sort of shooting endeavor you want to prepare for, be it hunting or self-defense or 1,000-yard competition or IPSC or IDPA, whatever it is. Find somebody in that area that is a good, qualified instructor, somebody that knows what they're doing, and they've trained in that particular firearm discipline that you want to learn, and seek them out. If it's an organized school, then great. If it's somebody who lives down the block that you know, that's great. If it's somebody that works in the gun store that truly does know, that's great. But seek it out. The best places I have ever found for defensive use of firearms are some of the organized schools that are out there. There's one in Tulsa, Oklahoma. There's one outside of Las Vegas. There's one near Paulden, Arizona. There's one in South Central Oregon. You know, there's one in Colorado. There's one back east in Virginia. Of course, there's North Carolina. There's one in Tennessee. There's another in Arkansas. There are organized shooting schools all over the country. Sometimes they're big, sometimes they're small. The thing is, if they are set up for defensive use of firearms, and that's what you want to learn, that's really why I'm on the air, go learn. If it's with a handgun, a shotgun, a rifle, all of the above, take some classes and learn about this. Once you really get the mental aspect of defensive use of firearms, and you understand the three secrets of actually having elements of marksmanship, that's sight alignment, sight picture, and trigger control. Align your sight, stare at the front sight, and press for a surprise break. That you understand the three elements that it takes to survive an actual armed encounter. That's gun handling, marksmanship, and tactics. Once you understand how to keep your gun running through reloads and malfunction clearances, through your safe gun handling, keeping your finger off the trigger until you're actually ready to press. Once you understand those things, how to run safeties, manipulate magazine releases, run decockers that may or may not be on the gun. Once you understand these things, then it's easier to transition from one gun to the next, from a handgun to a long gun to a shotgun. Once you've got an understanding of those things, actually transitioning and carrying the different guns, it's just a matter of practice and some of the techniques, like ejection port loading for a defensive shotgun. How to clear a Type 3 double feed off an AR-15 as opposed to, say, a Type 3 that might occur in a lever-action Marlin or Winchester 94. Those are some semantics that you would learn at the schools. But the actual basis, foundation, idea for defensive shooting, once you've got that handled, you're pretty well good to go. More coming at you after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
I just want to say I really appreciate all of the emails that I get. If you ever want to email me, it's bill@2aradio.com. 2 as in second, A as in amendment, radio is in the thing you're listening to. 2aradio.com, bill@2aradio.com. I get a lot on this whole swine flu vaccination thing, and what do I think about it? I've made myself very clear on this fact, on my position on this, and that is I am not going to be a recipient of this swine flu vaccine based on allegedly trusting the government for their sources. I worked as a contractor for the Department of Defense at Dugway Proving Ground in Utah, which is, they and Aberdeen in Maryland are the two main testing grounds for chemical and biological warfare. All right, most of it's all lab work at this point in time. But just understanding what the government is capable of within their own labs, and history showing that they're just a bunch of liars, I am not sure that I will ever get any sort of vaccine if they said it was mandatory. Just not going to happen. It's not so damn mandatory I'm going to get one. Yeah, that's just me. I'm a cynic. I am a cynic. I've been involved on the inside a little bit as a contractor, just seeing what the capabilities are. I'm a cynic because I've been lied to as an American citizen. I am a cynic. Keep this in mind as well. Many of you may remember, many of you, this may be news to you. In 1976, the federal government said, Gerald Ford came out and said, there's a swine flu. We need to have a vaccination. So a lot of people went down and got this vaccination. You know what they got for it? A high percentage of these people, more than you might expect, had all sorts of neurological disorders come as a result of getting that vaccination, which was not perfected. They're rushing to it now. People say, oh, technology, technology. You know what? When you're dealing with things such as trying to come up with a vaccine for a virus, don't start throwing the technology thing out there. There's just no technology. It's biology. And biology doesn't change. It takes tens of thousands of years to change biological entities. So technology doesn't have much to do with it, guys. Trust me. It just doesn't. Any of those of you out there with any background in microbiology can confirm what I'm saying. So we've had it before. There, you can actually seek it out. There's a Mike Wallace did a show on 60 Minutes back in the, sometime after 1976. I think it was right around 1980, dealing with the spine flu of the mid-70s and what happened with the vaccines and what actually happened, more so what didn't happen with the flu itself. So this is history repeating itself. Most people have forgotten all about it. Most people have forgotten about Katrina. Almost everybody's forgotten about 9/11. Stupid people in this country elected a de facto Muslim president. Tell me people have any kind of a memory around here. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The Two-Way Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.